All right, live from Lower BCC, this is Red Sea Radio. We're back again with another episode this week on WVOF 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Kyle Majors, along with Jack Sarasulo. Jack, another week in Stag Country. How are we doing this week?
I'm good. I wasn't good on Friday, but...
I was going to say, that didn't look good right there. You just kind of put your hands in your face and cried a little bit. What was that?
You reminded me that Fairfield played basketball this weekend.
Reminded the results of the weekend?
Yeah.
So, we're going to get into Fairfield basketball in this. Let's start on a more positive note. Matt Turner news. Played this past week. USA won 3-0 against Honduras. And Turner played in what had to be one of the coldest games in their history.
Was it 4 degrees?
It got down to the negatives. Yeah, one or negative. And I think a couple guys on the other team got, like, hypothermia.
You told me that.
So... one of the coldest games in U.S. soccer history. They won 3-0, thankfully, much needed win. And now they move on to the last World Cup qualifying window in March. They play Mexico, Panama, Costa Rica, need like a draw and a win. We'll see what happens, but we'll keep you updated on that. And hopefully they qualify for the World Cup. And hopefully Matt Turner can join them in Qatar in the end of the year. So Fairfield basketball played 2 games since our last episode, and currently now their conference record is 4-7. They're sitting down there towards the bottom of the rankings, and we'll start off with Fairfield Monmouth. So Fairfield Monmouth Friday was a pretty good game, ended 59-56 Monmouth with the buzzer beating win off the bank at the buzzer.
Shouldn't have counted. But that's what Kevin said. He's like,
why?
He was like, he didn't call back. He shouldn't have counted.
Oh. Well, unfortunately, this isn't pickup rules. So Fairfield did fall on that buzzer beater. I really didn't think, actually, that they were going to hit that shot at the end. You know how, like, we usually say on here that Fairfield, every time it's like a close game like this, you just assume they're going to lose?
And also,
that feeling.
Also, it like, especially in the MAC, you can tell kind of like when the ball comes out of the hand, like usually you can kind of tell it's like, oh, that's not going in.
Yeah, can tell just in general, even like not just the shot, but just the possession, I just felt like they weren't going to score for some reason. I thought it was going to go to overtime. I just felt that was the feeling I had going into that possession. And usually I'm negative. Usually it's like I would have said, all right, we're probably going to give up some basket here. Probably not a 3. I probably would have thought it would have been something in the paint, but... on that situation, I didn't think we were going to lose. My feeling going into it, the shot was not a good shot, which is even more disheartening, but it went in, and they won, and we didn't. And it's another close, heartbreaking loss for Fairfield at the end of the game, which has been pretty much almost all of our conference losses at this point, which is really frustrating.
I mean, we haven't really had not many huge blowout conference losses so far.
One of our only, I guess, blowout losses is what? Marist.
But that wasn't like, it was just like...
coming off the COVID pause. It was also just, it's weird that that's the team that blew us out, right? Because they're one of the worst teams in the league statistically at the moment.
Yeah,
so are we, but...
the toughest part about it is like, you're 4-7, and we had 2 games against Monmouth and a game against Iona. All were like coin flip games. Like, say we flip 2 of those games, you're, 5-6? 6-5 in conference with wins over... either 2 wins over Monmouth, the second best team in the conference, or a win over Iona and a win over Monmouth, the 2 best teams in the conference.
Yeah, but that
look like so much better.
The thing is, too, I was having this conversation with one of my coworkers the other day at the games. Like, at a certain point in the season, it was like, all right, we played Iona and it was close. We proved that they're beatable. You know, we had the lead on them for a while. And then 2 weeks ago or whatever, we played Monmouth. It was close. We proved we could beat them. We proved they're beatable. We proved to us that we could hang with the top teams in the league. But at a certain point, when you keep dropping these close games, it's no longer a positive because we can hang with them. At what point does it become it? And I think this is the point where it becomes it that, you know, we're just dropping these close games because we're not good enough to finish these games. Like, it can't be a positive for the whole season that we're hanging close with these big teams, because at a certain point, you got to look at yourselves. Why are you dropping every single close game with the exception of 1 or 2?
And also, it's a lot worse with, like, when you talk about, like, oh, it was like a close loss against Monmouth, close loss against Iona. But then when you drop games against, like, a Siena and a Marist, you're like, you can't even, like, look at, like, oh, a close loss against Iona, because that game means a lot in terms of seeding. Like, we were like 6-5, 6-4, 7-3, whatever. And we lost, like, that game to Monmouth. I'd be like, oh, just, like, you know, comes and goes.
Cause, that, like, kind of, like, further proves us as a team that can't finish late, too, right? Because it's like when you have those late losses against those big teams, you have a little more leeway to come on here and be like, all right, you know, they're statistically a better team than us, and we hung with them. But then when you're doing it against teams, like you said, like Siena, who's still higher up in the standings, but I don't really think they're a great team. And then, like, you did it against Quinnipiac, Marist, these schools that you should be beating too. I think it just further proves that you gotta look at yourself instead of just kind of saying it's a positive that we hung with these teams, you know.
And the best part about, like, I guess the situation is that with the conference tournament, the way it is made, it does kind of allow Fairfield to kind of take positive out of those games no matter what. I mean, no matter what, we'll be playing in the conference tournament. It's like the, like a professional sport league where, like, you lose enough games in the regular season, you won't even have a chance to play for it. So I guess there is always positives out of it, but it's just, like, frustrating. Because, like, obviously that bye would be huge. And, like, we kind of, before the year started, we were, like, and when the season first started, we started off so well. We kind of almost expected that bye at one point. We were like, okay, like, goal is the bye. But now it's, like, goal is to not play Iona in the first round, or the second round, I guess.
Yeah, we're still right in the mix. And if you look at the, you know, if you look at the standings, I mean, everyone's within, like, two games of each other besides
that
the
also
top.
Just means we're within two games of the bottom, too.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, from five down, it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. It's very close. You know, we're still very much in it, but it's like these are the games that we had to have. Like, Siena, that was a game, like, we had to have, you know, especially at home, six-game, you know, homestand opening up. You know, it's not going to get
four buys
much easier either for us. We're playing some teams that we should beat in terms of, like, you know, Quinnipiac on Wednesday. But then we got Niagara, who just beat Iona, you know what I mean? Manhattan, we haven't seen yet. They've had some good games. So we're still not totally out of
not
that
totally out of it.
Range, but, I mean, we're really going to have to finish the season strong if we want to.
And, I mean, at this point, we kind of have to lock in, like, Iona, obviously. Monmouth, pretty likely going to get that one of the buys.
Peters.
St. Peter's. I mean, it's going to be a takes a lot for them to kind of blow that. So it's like, if you're really looking that closely, if you want to be in, like, the glass half full, like, looking towards climbing instead of just not falling.
You're fighting for, like, one or two spots.
You're fighting for the last spot, the Siena spot, which, I mean, for all we know, Siena might just be that team.
And also, you kind of blew your chance against Siena yesterday.
Yeah,
and
that's a huge swing. I mean, they would be 6-5. We would both be, Fairfield would be 5-6. They would be 6-5. You'd be a game back.
And they've dropped two to Siena this year. I really haven't been impressed with Siena either. So to drop two to them is, it just puts us in a different, it's just a whole different scope of, you know, dropping two to Siena versus dropping two to Monmouth. I think if we beat Siena on Sunday, I think we could have lived with it a little bit more, the Monmouth loss. And I think we would have been a little bit more high-spirited going into this show and into this week and into the rest of the homestand. But getting swept by Siena this year, you know, it's a rebuild year for them. And they're sweeping us, who we just, going into the season, were the team that made it to the MAC final last year and was returning everyone. And, you know, for us to get swept by them is pretty disheartening. On our home court, close game, pretty crowded crowd on Sunday, and couldn't get it done in front of the fans. And I'm interested to see how Wednesday's attendance will look, or just the rest of the homestand with the way we've been playing, because it just, you know, it's been a disheartening last couple weeks for Fairfield. I think people are starting to get a little fed up with the way we've been finishing games.
I mean, it's also just annoying to play, like, especially in the Monmouth game, like, you play 35, like, good, I think they played, like, a good game against Monmouth, I would say,
yeah.
A solid game. You play 35 minutes, like, good basketball on the road against, like, a really good team, and then, like, you, like, one or two turnovers, like, silly turnovers just, like, change the entire game. It's, like, all that work just to...
Yeah, and it always ends that way.
Lapse of concentration.
It always ends that way because it feels like a lot of these losses are not just straight up because the team's better than us too.
No, yeah, even like
that's the worst part.
Even
about
the
it.
Iona game, which is like an obvious situation where the team is better.
Yeah,
it didn't feel that way because they played out of their mind. But
no,
they
it's always like a case of us beating ourselves too, and that's what makes it so much more disheartening. Because it's like you said, the turnovers, right? at the end, dumb turnovers.
Bad time management, clock management.
Clock management, just missing passes, not seeing passes, or just really just bad possessions. Like the end of the Siena game, the last possession or last two possessions were just bad possessions. Like, it almost seemed as if they had no plan at all.
I mean, like, to put in perspective how bad our end-of-game possessions have been, like, think about our best ones this year. It's been, like, the Iona one, which ended up in a blocked three. And the UMass game, which ended up in a missed mid, like, deep two jump shot. Yeah. And those, I would say, were our, like, best shots we've gotten at the end of games.
The end of the Siena game was really, really just a horrible possession. And that was really, really frustrating to watch.
Like, the end of the first Monmouth game as well was kind of a similar situation.
Yeah. Because they're coming off timeouts in both those situations. I don't think...
In most of them,
maybe
I mean.
Not directly in the Siena game, but they had a timeout within, like, a minute or so of that play happening. Like, why don't they have a plan going into that last possession? Like, we could save that for now if you want, because we could do the Monmouth game first. But it definitely is interesting to talk about.
It's just interesting how, like, it seems like teams kind of know what's going to happen before, like, Fairfield even does on final plays. I mean, maybe it's just like they don't have that many options.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a lot of options, and some in this stretch right here, these past two games, you know, Taj and Jake haven't played really well at all, so that kind of limits the options even more.
Like that first Monmouth game, we remember, like, they tried to run a pick for Woj, I think, or Taj maybe, and, like, they couldn't even get the ball to him because they basically jumped the passing lane before he could even run off the pick. Like, the play blows up before they can even start it most of the time in these situations.
Yeah, and I guess maybe that could be the reasoning why, but it just looks like they almost have no plan at all when that happens, because maybe they have no backup plan when something like that
happens.
They
don't have, like, multiple, like, options coming off. Like, it would be interesting to ask Coach Jay Young if we get him on again, just kind of, like, his, like, process behind it. Like, yeah. If he's more, like, freelance, or if he kind of is more like a set play.
Because that is one of, like, the focal points of the season, is, like, final plays, final possessions, or at least, like, finishing games. I mean, things, like you said, things go our way. We could have 4 or 5 more wins, all based on, like, the last 20 seconds of a game each time. So that is one of, like, the main purposes or one main points of the season that needs to be
questioned. Even, like, to give, like, and, like, Jake, give Jay on credit. Like, he still gets us to that point. He still gets us within, like, a basket of beating Iona, a basket of beating Monmouth twice. So it's, like, it's just, like, a part of the game that, like, it's just a, there's no right answer to it, kind of.
Yeah,
what to call.
I don't know, because at a certain point, I feel like you do have to start looking at the decisions, though, because, I mean, other teams aren't going through this. Like, other teams in the MAC aren't losing, like, 7 5-point games, 2-point games. Like, it's okay to happen every once in a while. You're going to lose close games. You're not going to take all, however many we had. You're not going to take every single one of them. But
someone's going to make a play on defense. Like,
when you virtually take none of them, the only one you've really taken was against the last place team, Marist. At a certain point, you do have to be like, why can't we ever grab any of these games that we should be?
It will be interesting to see next time they have a close game, if they maybe don't, like, maybe they should try, like, maybe not calling timeouts. Like, if they give, like, a basket with, like, 10 seconds left, maybe they let them, like, do it on the fly. Like, you see guys do that sometimes.
They kind of did that against Siena. I don't think we had any timeouts left, but that went really poorly because they had no plan at all.
I mentioned I missed the second half of the Siena game, so I did not see that.
Yeah,
so,
and I missed the first half of the Siena game, so combined we're like, we watched a game. Yeah. Let's look at the Monmouth game now, and then we'll get into Siena later. So, stats-wise, we only shot 38% from the field and 31% from three. Three-point shooting's been pretty poor as of lately, past two games. Free throw line, 6 of 10, not great, which also in Siena wasn't great as well. 35 rebounds, so they're 32, so we actually won the battle in the paint. So we had 6 assists, 5 steals, 1 block, 12 turnovers, which, again, not a great stat. We always, what we even said on the show last time, we were trying to aim for under 10, right? And 12 turnovers, they had 12 as well. 17 fouls, and our largest lead was only 2, while theirs was 9. So right there, largest lead. This game was interesting because it felt like we were not in control really ever, but it felt like we were in it, and it felt like we should win to me for like a decent portion of the game. I felt like we were playing well, and I felt like we had a real chance to win. We never really led the game by more than two.
Yeah, we,
which is interesting. We were always constantly a little bit behind.
They were it was a constant like 6 to 8 point games, and then they would cut to four, then we'd go back up to eight, and like it was just constantly back and forth like deficits. And then it hit like a point with like 5 minutes left that they like took the lead, and you're like, oh, like shoot, like they actually might win.
Yeah.
It, like, you didn't realize they could win until they actually took the lead with, like, no time left, and you were like, holy crap.
But looking at it from Monmouth's side, it's like they were able to weather the storm. They obviously gave up the lead, but then they came back and win. And then when we have those situations, it always feels like we have a stretch in the game where we just don't score for, like, 3 minutes, and the other team, we allow them to fully come back. You know, when other teams are chipping away, we're never, like, chipping back at them. You know, we have those stretches where it's just 3 minutes of not scoring, and then they have a 8-0, 10-0 run, and it completely flips the script. So that's why when we're in those situations, it hurts that we can't
just
at least kind of weather the storm a little bit. We've never really weathered the storm well. It happened in Iona, obviously. That was, like, the biggest example of the season, of just not being able to at least put some points on the board so that when they're, you know, storming, we can at least keep somewhat of a lead instead
of just
blowing
example.
It in 2 minutes.
And also, it's just a matter of, like, getting, like, quality shots up, because I feel like when those stretches happen, it's a lot of, like, turnovers, shot clock violations, like, just, like, empty possessions without even, like, a good shot. So, like, it's just a matter of, like, getting into sets and, like, getting into the paint, like, free throws. Like, I feel like when we go on those stretches, you don't see any free throws, you don't see any, like, open, like, layups, none of that stuff. It's all, like, contested threes or, like, any type of turnover.
You're saying when we're winning?
When we're winning and, like, that run's happening, I feel like there's rarely any, like, good shots getting taken in those stretches.
From our side?
From our side, yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of goes into clock management, too, because you should be kind of grinding out the clock, driving, trying to get fouled, trying to get free throws. Those are the type of times when you can go to Cook and Mido and try to get them to work the paint. And it feels like it doesn't happen. Even in Siena, we could have went to the bigs more, and it didn't happen that way, especially on the last possession or last whatever.
Also,
that last possession.
I mean, it puts a lot of stress on other teams' bigs when you get in the post. Like, it's a lot of stress and effort put on those bigs to guard guys in the post every single possession. So, I mean, it also contributes back to, like, the offensive end. And maybe, like, could have helped against Monmouth, like, getting, I forget his name
Miller.
Every time. Miller, getting Miller tired on that end of the floor, so he won't be as dangerous on offense.
Yeah, so looking at the stats for our guys, Supreme Cook had 11 points on 4-7 from the field. He was 3-5 from the line, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 fouls. So he actually played better in this game. I know we talked about how we're interested to see how they would use the bigs in this game because of how kind of clogged the paint was the first time around against Monmouth and how they didn't really allow our bigs to get too dominant in that one. I feel like Supreme played well overall.
I think he did a good game, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look, he was one of the leading scorers as well. I feel like he played well, and obviously Miller had 15. Kind of tough to contain him. I mean, he's a good player.
Good.
Yeah, he's a good player, but I think he overall did well, Supreme. Allen Jean Rose, he only played 12 minutes in this one, 2 for 3 from the field. He had 4 points and 1 foul, and that was really all from him across the board.
I would love to see more Allen minutes. I think we kind of, like, plateaued after that stretch where he started, like, every game and was playing, like, 30-plus minutes or whatever it was. But
it's just so interesting that he – I mean, I've already said it in the last episode. It's going to sound like a broken record, but it's just weird how during that stretch earlier in the season, he was taking a ton of shots, playing a ton of minutes, starting, and even led us in scoring once or twice. And now, you know, he took 3 shots in this one, 12 minutes, and then Sunday he didn't even start. And it's weird. I don't know. I don't get the whole
season,
how, like, things are – they change so much. I don't know.
Yeah, the rotations are, like, almost, like, too fluid to an extent. Like, they're, like, too – they change too much. It's
yeah.
Like, but, like, I would love to see Allen, like, be, like, the main ball handler more. I feel like when he has the ball, like, and he drives with it, he gets, like – he's so long and gets to the rim, like, so easily.
Yeah, he does struggle sometimes turning the ball over
in
those situations.
He's not the best dribbler, but, like, when he gets downhill and, like, starts moving forward.
I think in a more one-on-one situation, he's good. But I think when the lane's, like, a little clogged or the paint's a little clogged, he then has a tendency he'll, like, dribble it off his foot or something bad, like, he could turn the ball over. When he's more one-on-one, he'll go at the guy, maybe Euro step, get to the rim, like you said. It's just weird because, you know, a lot of these other teams, they have their guys, right? And they have their rotations.
They have that main guy.
Or not even just the main guy, but, like, they have their rotations pretty set. Like, I'm interested to see. I feel like Fairfield's probably the only team that the starting lineup changes, like,
every
weekly
game.
For every game. And that the minutes fluctuate so much. Like, I'd be interested to see if there's any data out there that, you know, looks at the fluctuation of minutes comparatively between the MAC teams. Obviously, we wouldn't have would be interesting to see because I feel like we probably fluctuate the most minutes-wise.
Just look at Monmouth last week against them to Monmouth this week. It's the same exact starting lineup.
Yeah. I mean, for most teams, it probably will be because they have their rotations pretty much figured out by the time you get to league play. That's almost the point of...
Yeah, it's preseason.
Of the ATA conference to figure out, you know, and ramp up what's our rotations going to be. And, yeah, you could definitely make changes to your starting lineup, but I just feel like ours change so frequently, like you said. It almost doesn't give the guys a chance to fluently, you know, get into a rhythm of this is what's going to be, I don't know, this is how we're going to start a game, you know. Opening sets and stuff like that are probably constantly changing because the team's not always the same. And it's just interesting because I feel like other teams don't do it besides us. And I feel like it probably does affect the team somehow.
And I feel like that could be like why end-of-game scenarios might be tougher. It's like when you have a different five guys for that last end-of-game scenario, you kind of, when you have like chemistry and continuity with the same five guys, it makes those like final shots easier. It's kind of like you know everyone's spots, you know kind of where everyone... wants
yeah,
the
of
ball,
course.
But when you're playing with a different guy next to you every game, it's in that situation. It's like I don't really know enough to like trust this guy to make this shot or trust this guy to make this pass, catch.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
pass.
No, that's like a great point because like when you play with the same group at the end, like you said, you're gonna know where everyone is and you're gonna know what people have tendencies to do, and they're just gonna have the certain chemistry to know, you know, I should get to this spot, whatever. But when you're playing with constantly different groups or there's different game plans for different guys to take the shot at the end and stuff, you can never really get into that rhythm. And we've had the chance to do it on a number of occasions now, you know, late game heroics, late game situations where the game's close. And if it was kind of the same people and the same plans for all of those, maybe they would be comfortable with it now and they maybe would have gotten a few of those wins. But when it changes so much, it's almost like five completely different situations instead of, you know, going through the same thing like five times with the same guys. But just in general, the minutes disparity, I think, proved this weekend that it kind of hurts, because if you look at TJ in this game, he played great against Monmouth and then he didn't play nearly as much against Siena.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, we were begging for like a while. It's like take less minutes from Caleb, give more to other people, and now we would love to have that 35 minutes of Caleb and Taj, like that kind of minutes distribution that we used to have.
Yeah, I guess I agree. It's interesting to think about because...
I mean, there's give and take. There's pros and cons to both types of...
Because we were such advocates for it, and now we're kind of like seeing the other side, and I guess... But taking minutes away from Caleb or Taj, like taking a few minutes away, not like a ton of minutes...
Yeah.
You can still allocate those minutes to other players and keep it consistent. The fact is just it's so inconsistent, especially among the guys who are like more at the bottom of the rotation. So like Allen, for example, TJ, you know, Chrysler, like those guys specifically, their minutes are changing so frequently that I think
it stunts their development. Yeah,
because they don't know, am I going to play 11 minutes tonight? Am I going to play 18 minutes tonight? Am I going to play 3 minutes tonight?
It's hard to lock in. Like, it's like hard to be like, oh, like, I feel like I'm going to only play like 5 minutes tonight. I'm not even going to like kind of get in that zone. And then you get to play 25 minutes and you're like not ready to play, which I'm not saying they do, but like it's just like a mental thing.
No, I know what you mean, though. It's like obviously they probably their pregame workouts probably the same either way, but it's just mentally tough knowing, all right, I might only play 3 minutes tonight. Why am I going to take 50 shots in pregame? I'm not even going to probably get a shot. And then you wind up playing 13, 14 minutes. And then, you know, it's definitely got to be mentally challenging to not know at all whether your time playing could be extremely minimal or extremely large.
And it especially hurts for guys like TJ and Chrysler who, like, their game relies so much on their rhythm, their shot rhythm, and, like, being able to, like, have a good their shot that night. And that fluctuation in minutes probably hurts their kind of shot so much in terms of, like, getting it, like, right and getting game speed shots up, it's probably tough for them. And probably why it contributes to, like, Chrysler having, like, some games where he is very poor shooting and better
TJ
shooting.
TJ as well.
TJ as well, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, as far as Allen goes, back to what we were originally discussing with the lineups and just the Monmouth game in general. You know, overall, he didn't have a bad shooting night, right? Only 2 for 3 and stuff. But it's just interesting to see him not have as big of a role. And I don't know. We'll move on from Allen. It's tough. I feel like his case is so unique because he fluctuates so much, too. Not only his minutes, but his play fluctuates.
Yeah.
So you don't really know what you're going to get from him on any given night. And it's interesting. We saw it on Sunday. He didn't start. So moving on, Mido. We were interested to see if they would start Cook and Mido. They did again. Obviously, Caleb didn't start. So they started Cook and Mido again. He only played 13 minutes in this one. 1 for 5 from the field. 2 points. 1 steal. 1 turnover. So a kind of another underwhelming performance for Mido. Not really an issue of aggression, I'd say, because he took 5 shots in this one. Usually we're more used to seeing him take like 1 or 2 shots and kind of get upset that he didn't shoot enough. But just not a great night from him. I don't know if it's because he just isn't as strong as someone like Miller or the other guys in the paint, but just not a great all-around night from him. We had Jake go 36 minutes, 2 for 13 from the field, 1 for 6 from 3, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 fouls, 2 turnovers, and only 5 points. So this was one of the – Jake along with Taj was probably our 2 biggest issues, not just – in this game, but this weekend. It's disappointing because I guess it just goes back to our inconsistency, right? Like, who would have predicted, besides me, who would have predicted that TJ would put up 18 and that Jake would have a poor game? And then, you know, you look back to the first Monmouth game and it's like Jake played really well, but then TJ didn't score and, you know, these other guys didn't contribute. And it's just such a inconsistent way of playing. And that's why we lose all these games, because you don't even know who's going to show up that day and score.
And to be fair, they've been able to keep these games close. It's because, like, there kind of has been someone that showed up every game, like one person. But, like, to get over the hump and, like, win these games and be, like, a quality team, you kind of have to have, like, multiple of those guys show up every night. But we just get one, if that. And then the rest kind of, like, disappear. It's like, you would love to see, a big game from Woj, a big game from TJ mixed together in the same 40 minutes.
If they had the ability for, you know, multiple guys to show up, not saying every person's going to have their best night out there, but if they had the ability for multiple guys to show up consistently, they'd be one of the top teams in the league.
And I'm not even saying, like, show up like Woj doing, like, 8 threes like he did in that Iona game. It's just, like, don't shoot 2 for 13.
Yeah.
It's like shoot like...
Give us like 13 points.
Yeah, and shoot like a semi-efficient...
Yeah.
Semi-efficiently.
But he was very poor in this one. I felt like I was waiting for him
and
to
And he
finally...
had some like plays where he like shot... He had some confident shots, like good moves that led to like good open threes, and you're like, this is the one.
Hit.
Yeah, it just didn't go in. But like the process is good for Wojcik, which is why we kind of keep that faith. Because like the whole... He gets open shots and he's able to like, create space, which is like...
Yeah, even in Siena, too. He's not taking bad shots during this stretch. He's just missing his shots, which I guess part of you is happy because he's still making the plays to get open, like you said, or he's still taking good shots. He's not just forcing bad shots up. But for that to be your top scorer or your most trustworthy guy shooting, 2-13, you know, it's very poor and obviously... It would have been crazy for us to pull out a win like this with, you know, Jake and Taj combining for 7 points. You know, it would have been crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been, I don't know, that would have been such a random win for us if we pulled out this win with them scoring 7 points. You know, it has to be a lot better from them. And if they played a little bit better, we would have been in a great chance or a great position to win this one. Taj as well, I mentioned, 26 minutes, 1 for 5 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, 3 turnovers, 4 fouls, and 2 points for him. So really, really tough game for him. And he's had a really tough stretch of games, not just this weekend, but, you know, for a little while now. So another interesting case that going into the season, we thought he was going to be, like, all MAC level, kind of like he was last year, and we haven't really seen it. I don't really know what the point or what you could pinpoint the decline on. I don't really have any... idea of why he's been playing so poorly.
Yeah, but I mean, it's due. He's due, and you just gotta hope Because, I mean, these are the guys that we have. Like, it's not going to change who's going to be getting these minutes, really. So you just got to...
Yeah, I mean, his minutes declined a little bit, though. Only 26 in that game.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of those guys where even if he's not shooting well, him and Woj are kind of the two of them where it's like, no matter how poorly you're shooting, you kind of want him on the court for 30-plus minutes no matter what.
Because it's still better than whatever else we have.
You just have to kind of have the hope that he's going to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, but we also could say he's due for the next month and...
Yeah,
you know, at some point, you got to start to hammer it down on these guys and try to get them to change something. You know what I mean? You can't just keep going through the motions of losing for the next month. But we'll move on to the bench. We'll only do two more guys. We'll talk about TJ, who had 29 minutes, 6 of 11 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, 2 for 2 from the line, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block, 1 foul, 18 points. I don't want to be that guy, but I definitely told you so on here last week. I called for a big TJ Long game, and it happened. I was super excited watching. First of all, I love TJ. He's a really exciting player to watch when he's on, when he's shooting. Really exciting player to watch. Plays fearless, goes at guys. Doesn't matter if it's Pappas. He was defending Pappas well, too, in the game, not to mention. I know it doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but defending Pappas well, he's not scared of anyone as a freshman. Really exciting player to watch, and I was very excited for him in this one. Shot the ball well, and, you know, 7 rebounds. He even had an assist. So he played well. He played decent against Marist, and then, or was it Ryder? He played decent against one of those teams, and then played decent in this, or played really well in this one, was probably the main reason we were about to maybe win the game. And then he goes into Siena and doesn't play nearly as much, and we'll talk about that in a minute when we get into that game. But just on this game, I just want to say he played really well, and it was very exciting to see, not just for now but for the future, because he looked good. It's all about that shot for him.
Yeah.
It just wasn't falling in previous times.
Because he's like, when he gets guys closing out hard, he knows when to like pump and drive, and he can finish, get the line. Like, his shot opens up like his entire game for him.
Yeah, and he can, you know, score from the line, shoots well from the line. Like you said, he can go up strong, have some and-one finishes, and he's been playing well on defense, too, for the most part. So, all around, it kind of seemed like a no-brainer going into Siena to, you know, play him a little bit more, but, you know, it didn't really work out that way. Finally, Cruz played 30 minutes, was 5 for 9 from the field, 1 for 1 from 3, 1 for 2 from the line, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 4 turnovers, 3 fouls, 12 points. What's your take on Cruz in this one? I know you have some things to say.
It's just like it's the turnovers. Like, he didn't even play that poor of a game. It's just like the last like 4 minutes, he just had such a tough final like 5 possessions of the game. It's just frustrating because like he's come so far and like gotten like improved so much kind of over the last like year with shot selection, and it's just like mental lapses. Like, the turnover he had was what? It was a behind the back like, out of his hands, like right into at midcourt.
Top of the key.
Yeah. Yep. And then you had the 10-second violation, which isn't even as much on him, but like, you kind of like, as the senior leader on the team, you kind of have to know to get the ball over the middle of the court, which is kind of something fearful. Surprisingly, he's a lot of trouble with.
Yeah. Almost once every game, pretty much.
Yeah.
One of the things that really was disappointing for me with Jesus, it also happened, I think, with maybe one or two other guys, was just how poor their vision was in this game. There was a ton of times when I think TJ
there was one definitely there was there one few. Specific one that we both noticed.
Yeah, we both screamed at the TV. TJ definitely was open on one of them. I think maybe Wojcik another time. TJ, it might have happened two or three times where, you know, Cruz had the ball or someone else had the ball and was either covered or double covered and just completely ignored a wide open man at the three-point line. It was TJ a couple times. I'm not sure who else.
And you had TJ, like smacking his hands. Like,
yeah, calling for
any,
the ball.
Any way to get his attention.
Calling for the ball and just completely tunnel vision, tuning him out, and turned the ball over, took a bad shot, and, you know, completely wasted the possession. And it didn't happen once. It happened 3 or 4 times, which was really frustrating. That could be literally up to 12 points, you know what I mean?
In addition to 2 turnovers at the end of the game, it's like, it adds up, especially in a 3-point game, a low-scoring 3-point game. It's like, you just make the right play on, like, 2 of those 6 plays, and it's...
You win.
You win.
It's interesting, too, because, like you said, you know, he played pretty decent on offense and stuff, not too bad. But kind of his whole career, Cruz has kind of been the type of player that when he starts dribbling for maybe 4 or 5 seconds, you kind of know he's not passing. Like, he gets into this rhythm where he starts dribbling, and I think he just tunes everyone out. Like, he doesn't pass the ball once he gets into those situations for, you know, a few seconds where he's dribbling. And then he'll go do his, like, patented spin move, and, you know, it works for him a decent amount of time. But I just feel like, I don't know how other teams haven't picked up on it, that he really rarely passes when he gets into that rhythm of dribbling for, like, more than 5 seconds.
I mean, like, that move succeeding early on should open doors for him to be able to pass out of it, not, like he should think about it as, like, when he starts getting that basket to drop, like, guys will start to come over
to
and
draw
help.
In on him. And I think that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, that's
the end
probably
of the
is what happened, because he had early on a couple baskets like that.
And he just didn't see the pass. And, like I said, that could have opened up 3 or 4 3-point plays for us, and it didn't. So that's definitely a difference maker. And we'll move on. We'll close the chapter on Monmouth. But I will say, if we see them again, I think we're going to beat them. So we'll wait and see if we meet them in the postseason. Siena Fairfield, 62-56 final. This one was pretty much a 3 or 4 point game going into it, into basically the last possession, but free throws kind of extended the lead a little bit more for them, made it look a little bit better for them. Fairfield shot 39%, only 16% from three in this one, 3 for 18, very poor. 7 of 11 from the line, but those misses were pretty crucial free throws at the end of the game. 30 rebounds, 8 assists, 8 steals, 2 blocks, 10 turnovers, 14 fouls, largest lead again for Fairfield, 2. Largest lead for Siena, 9. So this one we'll keep a little bit more brief. I didn't get to watch the first half because I was handing out T-shirts in the corridor of Webster Bank Arena.
I, like, followed it on my phone, so I didn't get to see actual, like, plays of it, but I was seeing who was scoring and kind of like Jake Wojcik made 3-pointer. And, like,
yeah, I was keeping up. I was out there keeping up whenever I could on my phone too, seeing who was scoring. But at that time, it really wasn't many people scored.
Yeah, it was
as
a
you
lot
can
of
tell.
Defensive rebound and turnover, yeah. And yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember, so during the second half, I got to go back down and work on the court and watch the game. So, skipping the first half, you know, watching the second half, I was talking to my coworker, and I was looked up at the Jumbotron, and I was looking where they have the numbers and the scores and who scored, and I was like, because he was working where the court is the whole game. So I was like, who's, like, the best player right now? Like, who's playing well for us? And he was like, I haven't really watched the whole game, but it doesn't really seem like anyone. And I was like, yeah, because I'm looking up at this Jumbotron, and no one scored in double digits. No one is even really close to double digits. Everyone has, like, 4, 5, 7, 2. Like, everyone on the court at that point had, like, almost no points. And then I kept looking as more players come in, whatnot, and pretty much no one had, like, any stats. And it was, you know, kind of maybe 10 minutes left in the second half or something like that. And I was like, wow. I mean, I guess I didn't miss much because it looked like no one was scoring. And even now, you look at the scoring on the day, you have, you know, Supreme with 9, Jake with 7, Caleb with 6, Cruz with 7, Taj the only one in double digits with 10, Allen 4, Mido had 8, Chrysler had 2, TJ had 3, and Leach had 0. It was a brief playing time. So very, very, very evenly distributed, but no one really stood out. No one really took the ranks and scored. And I guess this is one of those situations where we just talked about, you know, how someone usually shows up, and that's the reason we're in the game. This might be one of those situations where no one really showed up, and that's why it was so distributed, but that's why no one really had that, I don't know, top-tier score for us. So just looking at the stats, you know, Mido and Cook had pretty good games, especially from what I've watched, but I just feel like they didn't utilize them enough, especially late, and they missed some key free throws. I think specifically Mido, Cook might have as well. They missed some pretty key free throws going into the pretty much end of the game. I think we had a chance to tie it, and I think Mido got the ball and tried to finish it. They fouled him, and then he only went 1 for 2 from the line. Little things like that that hurt us right at the end. Chance to tie it.
I mean, especially with, like, guys like Cook and Mido who get to the line probably more consistently than any other player on the team.
Well, that's the thing, too. If they could improve their free throw shooting, and Cook was pretty good at the beginning of the season, and his numbers have dropped a little bit as of late, free throw-wise, if they could consistently make their free throws, they would be so much more dominant because teams wouldn't want to
just foul,
send them to the line.
Yeah.
Right now, it's almost like, you know, you send Mata to the line, it's almost like guaranteed he's probably not going to go two for two.
It's not even like, it's like not only rising for like a crazy percent, we're rising like 75%, like 70, 75%. Like,
yeah, because I mean,
one out of two every
typically,
time.
Typically, centers don't go like 90%, 80% from the
line.
We're
thinking one out of two most times, two out of two kind of consistently, but now we're really getting neither most times, one
closer
out of
to
two.
Like 50 or 33%.
Mido's, or not Mido, Cook is 65%. 66, 65, or 9. And Mido is... He's 57. So it's like... I mean, he's getting better. He was 41 last year. But, like, that needs to be better.
Yeah, because it would really make them so much more dominant if that number was a little bit higher. Cook's not terrible, but, you know... I think it also matters when you do it, right?
Yeah.
That's what they always say on the broadcast. It's not about how many you score, it's about when you score.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they always say on the Fairfield broadcast. But it really is true in these situations with free throws. It's not really just about how many you make, but it's also about when you make them, because in those late game situations were when those free throws happen for those guys, and if they go two for two in some of those situations, the game could have been tied, or the game could have been a lot closer. And then we don't need a three at the end, we need a two, or you know what I mean? Or we only need a two to win it at the end. You know, it changes, completely changes the whole narrative of the end of the game. So,
and with how much they struggle at the end of the games, it could, like, it helps so much being down one instead of two, two instead of three. It just gives them so many more options and probably makes the final play a lot cleaner if they can drive.
Sure.
And
okay, so Jake also shot 3 for 10 in this one, 1 for 7 from three. You know, everyone struggled from three. Taj went 0 for 3. Cruz was 1 for 3. Everyone pretty much struggled from three in this one. But again, another poor game for Jake. And I know I saw some people talking on Twitter. I think it might have been Frank said it on Twitter that, you know, when Jake shoots poorly, one of the bad aspects of him shooting poorly is that he sometimes allows it. I'm not sure. This might have been on the message boards. I don't know who said it. When he's shooting poorly, he sometimes allows it to just affect his whole mood and the way he plays, and it also will go back and affect him on defense, you know, hang his head, and we don't need that, because not only are you shooting poorly then, but then you're also defending poorly, and it could affect his whole attitude sometimes. That's what I was reading a little bit on, I think it was on the message boards, and, you know, if he's going to be shooting poorly like this, you would just hope that he could find ways to maybe facilitate his other teammates a little bit better. Because he's still good at dribbling and you know, finding other guys. And he's still going to have that emphasis on him as one of the top guys. Even if he's not shooting well, I feel like defenses will still emphasize him as the guy to try to contain.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when he's having these poor nights, the best thing he can do is try to still use his star power, or whatever you want to call it, to try to help other guys get open.
The first Monmouth game, that's what Pappas did.
Yeah.
He was not shooting well. He still used his gravity to kind of pull defenders towards him and open up spots for other guys.
Yeah, exactly. He did that well, and it worked against us. And I think that's kind of one of the things that sets apart, you know, the good players from the really good players, is finding ways to contribute even when you're not having your best night. So we'll see if he can do that going forward this week, tomorrow, and into the whole homestand. Caleb finally got his healthy chunk of minutes. He's finally back. He was in the starting lineup. He went 3 for 8 from the field in 32 minutes, 0 for 1 from 3. He had that wide open 3. I thought he was going to hit it. That would have been a pretty big game swinger, too. That was kind of towards the end of the game. Three assists, 2 steals, 1 turnover, 2 fouls, 6 points.
It's even more frustrating with these lower scoring games that, like, 1-3 really can, like, switch everything. Like, when we were scoring a lot earlier in the year, it's like guys had bad games, but it's like, I mean, you would need like 4 of them to go in to kind of switch the tides. But like when you're only giving up like 60 points every game, it's like, oh, if you just have that 1-3 back, you're like,
yeah,
that.
That's also the same with the turnovers.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with Monmouth.
Just like possessions in general.
Yeah, possessions mean so much more. If we didn't have that one turnover, you know what I mean? That's a possibly like a 4 or 5 point swing, you know what I mean, if we had scored versus them scoring. So, yeah, it means a lot more. And as a fan, you think back to like each of these like late game situation scenarios, each of these possessions, I should say, and you think back, oh, if we had that Caleb three, oh, if, you know, Mido hit the free throws, oh, if we didn't, you know, if Allen didn't let that guy blow by him and score. It's like all these different, each thing means so much to you. I guess as a fan, you kind of think about all of them in regret. And I guess you hope the team thinks about each of them as well and understands that the fact that each of those played such a big role in it because of the game was so close. And maybe going forward, they can understand that every possession really does mean so much. So don't just let some guy run down the court, blow by you for an easy layup, or don't just, you know, throw up a bad shot because, you know, that could be the difference. Even though it's not with 5 seconds left on the clock, it could still be the difference in the game. Anyway, I'm happy that Caleb's back, I'd say. You know, he still shot decent for being out for a few weeks. And I hope that the offense could get better with him back. You know, I think he was among the top in three-point percentage for the team. So you got to hope that the offense could be better with him back, with getting him a little bit more in the swing of things. Another guy that came back was Jalen Leach. He only played 5 minutes, and he didn't score, but he's definitely going to need a lot more time than Caleb to really get acclimated with the team because he was out for a long time. But it's just still nice to see him back. He just, I don't know, I feel like, I don't know how you feel on him, but I feel like I just still believe in his potential. I just feel like we've never got to see it. I feel like he got hurt last year, ended his season, and then hurt this year. I feel like he hasn't had a real chance to fully prove himself.
Yeah, I mean,
and it might be a little too late this season as well, but I still hope he can somewhat get back into the swing of things by the time the tournament comes around. And I still think he could be valuable.
And especially like with how poor they've been offensively, it's like a guy that can shoot like that and is like athletic, like we've seen like a potential from him. So it's like, why not give him a shot if like everyone's struggling? Like, why not give him a couple of
minutes? It can't be worse than what we have now.
Even like a couple of Cruz's minutes if he's struggling. Like, there are so many guys that are struggling that it's like, it's worth giving him a shot and thinking he can just like lighting in a bottle for a little bit.
Yeah, it's just going to take some time for him to get game shape and get.
You need like a couple games of him. Like, you had Caleb last game played like what, 10 minutes? Like, you like, when they come back from injury, you need like that buffer.
Yeah, and he wasn't like a high minute getter anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so it's like you're gonna work your way slowly, and if he has a good game, he'll work his way into more of a rotational spot, hopefully, if he does play well.
Yeah, but I'm excited to see him back. I hope that things go well for him.
Any shooting for this team is exciting because, like, we've honestly, since we've been here, they've kind of had trouble shooting.
Yeah.
They've had certain guys that can shoot, but overall as a team have struggled shooting-wise.
All right, so we'll move on. We had Cruz, he had 7, Taj had 10. But still, I mean, Taj still went 3 for 10 from the field, so it's like percentage-wise still wasn't great, 0 for 3 from 3. Yeah, I mean, TJ is one guy. He got 17 minutes, but he only shot the ball 3 times. And he went 1 for 2 from 3, which was probably the best 3-point percentage of the night. But I still would have liked to see him get more usage. All around the board, I guess. Just to wrap this up, because I feel like there's not much more to say about it. It's just really poor to not go out and get this win. It really could have kick-started a nice homestand. And I really don't think Siena's a great team. They're not that impressive to me. And they are in a rebuild. I don't even think they impress themselves. And for us to get swept by them is pretty, pretty disappointing. I don't...
Especially if they're the team we're trying to chase for that bye or that next seed.
They're almost the team we like envy right now because like, we wish they were in their spot. And how are they? You feel like, how are they figuring it out and we can't? Because they really don't seem like they're that much better than us. But somehow they're figuring it out. Is it coaching staff? Is it players? What's the issue? Like, how are they in that spot that we want to be in when they really shouldn't be? So that was very disappointing. Kind of the end of that game was really, really disappointing to me. Oh, that's the one thing I don't even think we talked about the end of the game. The last possession, they had Caleb run down, kind of like dance around the top for a little bit, go in for like a floater in the paint, which isn't the lowest percentage shot ever, but Caleb doesn't shoot those types of shots too often where you're, like, super confident in it. Anyway, we get the rebound, kicks it out to Cruz, who takes a very deep three, airballs it, and that's essentially puts the dagger in us.
Usually how those possessions end up, with Cruz taking a deep three.
The issue is that, you know, it just seems so much like we don't have a plan at all. Like, those are not things that we would do on
a normal possession. Yeah.
So why did things drastically change? Like, are the players panicking? Is that part of the issue? Why is it so different from the usual way we play when it's those situations? It just feels like they actually have no plan at all. Like, I feel like they're like chickens running with their heads off. Just let's figure out. Like, it's like playing hot potato or something. Like,
yeah.
Who wants to put the ball up? Like, and it shouldn't be like that. And that was very, very frustrating. I was really upset, honestly, at the end of that game. Kind of ruined my mood for a little bit, but then my family came up and we got Frank Pepe's and it made me feel better. So we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap the show up. I know it went a little long, but we hope you guys enjoyed listening. As far as this week goes, we got Quinnipiac tomorrow. You're going to have to watch that one.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Why?
Because I'm going to the Morgan Wallen concert tomorrow. So I'm
gonna, oh, you are? Yeah, I will. Miss I will. It. Wait, what time is it at? I might have
it's
class.
It's 7.
I'll watch it in class.
Yeah, watch it in class. It's more important. So you're going to have to take the reins on that one for next week's show. But then we also got Niagara this weekend. I think it's actually a doubleheader of men's and women's games at Webster Bank Arena this weekend. On Saturday, Niagara at 1. And then Canisius is on Valentine's Day. I'm probably going to miss that one too. So, oh, you might miss that one too.
No, I'll be good on.
You're skipping Valentine's
Day? No, we're doing it on Saturday, not Monday.
All right, so we'll see. I'll try to watch some of that game. But it's a busy week for not only Fairfield, but for us. We got Super Bowl this weekend too, so make sure you guys out there, all you Fairfield fans out there, make sure you take some time to keep yourself sane during this stretch, especially if we start losing these games. Make sure you watch the Super Bowl and take care of yourselves, because it's been a stressful week for Fairfield basketball and for the fans. So we hope you guys are doing well. We hope you guys enjoyed listening to the show. And we will be back next Wednesday to talk about a plethora of games, 3 games. And we're probably going to have a lot to say. So make sure you tune into that. Interact with us on Twitter, like always. And we'll leave you off, like we always do, by saying, go Stags.